Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Alec Baldwin is an actor known for his roles in 30 Rock, Glengarry Glen Ross, and of course, for playing Donald Trump on Saturday Night Live, as well as his philanthropy and political work. What is it going to be like not to play Trump anymore?
God, no, please don't say that.
Or will you always play Trump?
I feel like you're a doctor. It's like a Woody Allen movie. You have my x-ray up against the screen, you know, and you're like, oh, I got bad news for you, Albie, you have cancer. Well, I think that, you know, we did it and we rode that into the ground, but it was necessary because as much as there's been rounds of people criticizing me for not doing a very specific Trump impersonation.
Wait, why?
Well, there was a large number of people who watched the show and watched the Plus 7 show online and watched clips and things like that. I mean, SNL is sliced and diced and reserved over the week like any other show, especially those shows that have little segments like that where you can post them online, like Fallon and so forth. All those comedy shows, they can repurpose them online. And we've had great success with the numbers for the show, very good success. And then there's been people who are, I'm trying to think of the best word, not the kindest word, word to describe people who are really hate my guts, and they say things like, "I don't know who we want to get rid of first, Alec Baldwin or Trump."
Oi.
But you understand that people are, you know, if I'm 30 years old, let's say I was 30, so that's 1988. I was 30. I'm 62 now, and if you went back 30 years from there, then the comedy icons that were, or comedy names, I shouldn't say icons, but the comedy names that were evolving were like, you know, to people now, I'm like Jerry Lewis to them. You know what I mean?
You are not that old.
I'm like Sid Caesar. No, but I'm from another generation, so far back. I'm like Bob Hope or something. You know? You are, I'm like the establishment douchebag that they hate and just want to get rid of. So I'm, for that reason alone, I'm glad. Just to give them a little gift, I'm glad. So.
You know what's funny is I think every time I hear a Trump impersonation, I think, oh, that person is impersonating Alec Baldwin doing Trump.
But you know something? The cold opening of the show needs to be a brisk, well-paced. It's a sketch that's 5 minutes or less. And this is a horrible analogy, a horrible metaphor. But you got to give that horse the stick all the way to the finish line. You cannot take any unearned pauses. You got to move it. It's brassy and loud. And Brendan Gleeson comes along to do his Trump thing in the thing with Jeff Daniels, which was fantastic. And I was really very admiring of that. But that's another animal. We, in the cold opening, I mean, decision I made was faster was better. The Trump that I would do talked faster. He was more, you know, kind of monochromatic. I mean, I gave Trump the amount of investigation and the amount of research I thought he deserved, which wasn't very much. So it just was something to come off of where I would often say to them, I would give them notes early on in the first season and the second season to inch us, and that is the word, to inch us closer to some writing where I could do a better Trump impersonation. You know, because there's Trump publicly, there's Trump at the podium at a rally, and then there's Trump privately when he's talking to Leslie Stahl and about to walk out of a 60-minute interview. One is much more kind of hushed and intimate, and like he's in the confessional. It's a very quiet thing. And then there's the other one at the rally. You can tell he's very, you know, Sleepy Joe, what can we say? What can we say? It's very sing-songy.
Yeah.
He's not a good performer. He's actually a dreadful performer. So a lot of what he does is filler that's killing time till he thinks of the next idea.
Yeah.
So he repeats himself a lot, and he's got a lot of vocalizing he does to stall and buy time before he comes up with his next mediocre idea.
I mean, it's interesting because you have played a lot of powerful characters in one way or another. One of our obsessions during quarantine is my kids and I have watched 30 Rock like 50 times. And that character is an amazing character.
I always use the same quote. You know, Roger Daltrey once said, "No one writes rock songs like Pete Townsend, and no one sings Pete songs like I do." There is a singer-songwriter battery there, and Tina and Robert and all of their staff. I mean, the whole couple dozen people that were in and out of that, Paul Appel, Vali, Chandrasekhan, and all the people that were writers, Jack Burdett, John Beege, all the people that were working with Tina and Robert over those seven seasons. They're the funniest writers I ever met in my life, and I just had to just say it. You know, I would just turn to Tina, and I would go, "What was the scene where Carrie Fisher walks out of my office?"
Oh, yeah.
And I turn to Tina when the doors close and I say, "Don't ever ask me to speak to a woman that age again." And all I had to do was just say it. Just don't put anything on it. You know, just say it. And the writing was funny. I mean, and I don't consider myself to be that funny, but they wrote a lot of funny stuff. So it was great.
You are funny, though. But I know what it's relative. She's a genius in that way.
She's a genius. Yeah, she is.
With that out, you played now two kind of really deep conservative people in the whole Trump. And well, you know, I think of like a 30 Rock. Like when you talked about like the Six Sigma training, like I had to sit through one of those things. And when that you did that, it was like it shook me to my core how much you embodied that. But did you learn any interesting personality lessons from like what you had to research on that role?
Well, I think whenever you play a character and you revisit it again and again, it does get into your blood a little bit. So like if you do a movie and you're in and out of those scenes, and when I used to make mostly films and act in films, those experiences were, you know, they could be as short as 5 or 6 weeks. They could be 10 or 12 weeks. They could be some monolith that was like 18 weeks or something. We did Cat in the Hat for like 5 months. Because Mike Myers was in the chair for like 6 hours. So we only had to shoot 5 hours or whatever. So it was a very, very crazy schedule. But my point is that when you do a play and you're doing that character again and again and again, and when you do a TV show and you do it for years, the character does tend to inhabit some of your life. So I would be in a restaurant and I would get a little Donaghy going every now and then. Like I'd look at somebody and say, "Does that glass look clean to you? Does that fork look clean to you?" You know, I just was appalled at any mediocre service or mediocre effort. You know, you give it your all, or you got to get written up on the report. And so, when I played that part, it definitely got into my life a little bit.
I'm glad you lost the accent, though, from outside Providence.
Yes.
One of the things that I think has been really cool about you is you have been really on the right side of things politically. And so has almost your entire family. Can you explain how you guys, I'm leaving one person out, obviously I will not bring that up. I don't want to be sensitive, but.
No, you can talk about him, go right ahead. He brought it on himself.
How did that happen? How did you guys all, can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, you know, my dad was a school teacher who had 1 year of law school. He went to SU Law School, and he was one of these guys where my mother grew up, and she didn't have a lot of money. They weren't rich, but they lived very well, and her father was a very successful guy. And both sets of my grandparents, both graduated from SU. And both my parents, you know, my parents met at SU, and my mother's family is from Syracuse. And so when my dad was going to school for a year, his father-in-law, my mother's father, was paying for it. And he kind of got a little freaked out about it. He didn't want to be depending on somebody like that. His pride got in the way. So he left after a year and went down to Long Island, where he got a job as a teacher in a school district there where he taught his whole life. And he taught what they used to call social studies, you know, history, economics, what have you, contemporary problems was a course he taught, and different things like that. And he was a very progressive guy. He was a very, very humanistic, very, you know, he would always say things to me. And I've said this in interviews before. He said to me once when I was a kid, he said, "You think if you were black, you would be Martin Luther King and you'd be pursuing the path of nonviolent resistance, or would you be more like Eldridge Cleaver and you'd be like throwing some elbows here?" And there was a long pause, and my father said, "I thought so." You know, if he were alive today, you know, where we've arrived in our society today, where people are going to have to start to embrace the notion in this country, that just as they announced in New York probably 10 years ago, they had the census and they said that whites in the five boroughs were the plurality, but no longer the majority. The city of New York was 49% at that time white and 51% people of color and Asian and so forth, Hispanic. And that's what's going to happen in this country. I mean, eventually white privilege, and as it's expressed through presidents throughout our life, with one exception, but names like, you know, Carter and Reagan and Ford and whitey white people running the show, with the exception of Obama, you see that that's going to change. And my father was somebody that kind of understood that, you know, that if we give people equal rights, it's going to, I don't want to say infiltrate, but pervade through every part of our society. And that's the change I think we see coming now, as more and more people of color, they want a seat at the table of power. They want to call the shots.
So what are you working on now? Can you tell us a little bit?
I'm doing a TV streaming series for Peacock Streaming that's being produced by Universal called Dr. Death, which this woman, Laura Beale, who's a writer in the Dallas area, covered this for, I think she covered it for the local paper. She wrote and produced and was the star, the voice of her own podcast called Dr. Death, an 8-part series about this guy, Christopher Dunch, who is serving a life sentence in prison for all of his botched medical care. He killed 2 people. He crippled 4 people. He crippled his best friend. He did a lot of, and Joshua Jackson is playing Dunch. He's the lead. And I play a doctor who brings him to justice, so to speak.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's face it, after a night with drinks, I don't bounce back the next day like I used to. I have to make a choice. I can either have a great night or a great next day. That is until I found ZBiotics.
ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic.
It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking.
Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut.
It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day.
ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow.
So, I first gave ZBiotics a try when I was having an existential crisis at a Dave & Buster's. I drank it before my first Dangerous Waters punch, and you wouldn't believe how on top of my game, no pun intended, I felt the very next morning.
Vacations, weddings, birthdays, and reunions. There's so much going on. Get the most out of your spring plans by stocking up on pre-alcohol now.
Go to ZBiotics.com/abnormal to get 15% off your first order when you use abnormal at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked.
Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/abnormal and use the code abnormal at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
Do you think you'll do more comedy? Because I find you hilarious. No! Why?
Well, they announced on Monday that we picked up this show. We've been developing a show for quite a while. We spent a lot of time, I mean, like this ungodly amount of time, producing this thing, a sitcom. And they just announced that ABC picked up this 4-camera sitcom for me and Kelsey Grammer. So Kelsey.
Oh, yes!
Kelsey and I are going to do a show where we're two old friends who are nemesis as well. We have a kind of on-again, off-again friendship, and we get reunited. And there's even a third character there. There's a third friend. We all meet at some guy's funeral. We all come together at a funeral. And at that funeral, the three of us decide that we need to be back in each other's lives more. And we take it from there. But it's a really, it's Chris Lloyd, who did Modern Family, and who did Frasier with Kelsey. We start shooting that at the end of February in L.A.
That is so cool.
I'm going to have to walk to L.A., though, because of COVID, but we'll see.
Yeah, how are you going to get to L.A.? And also, do you have many dogs and kids?
We have a guy we can board the dogs with when we go away. The kids.
You can board the kids.
Well, I want to board the kids. So I wonder if you'll take the kids, too. They fly us out there on a private plane because of the COVID.
Yeah.
I'm not opposed to flying commercially. It doesn't really bother me. But what's happened is with the COVID, it's like I haven't flown at all. And if I did, everything was like someone's going to give me a private plane to keep away from the whole airport thing. And it's tough. I don't mind flying commercially, but with my wife and all my kids, we have to try to book the whole first class
cabin. You have a lot of kids.
It's a little tough. It's tough.
You have, though, been very much politically involved and also on the right side of things. Will you do more of that, do you think?
Well, I think that for me, it's a question of time because my age, if you honestly asked me 12 years ago when I turned 50, what I thought I'd be doing now, I thought I would probably be working a lot less and I'd be in Nice on a yacht just eating and having nice lunches and just fucking off all the time. And maybe we work if we have to, if we really have to go get some cash and do something. And we don't really give a shit about any of that anymore. That's, in the past. And that's, of course, not what happened. I met a woman that I fell madly in love with. We had 5 children in 7 years. It's the most fucked up, insane plan. I'm 62 years old. I have a 3-month-old son.
Really cute.
Everything is in terms of my availability. But I do think that in this coming year, especially once the vaccine is here and we can move around a little bit more freely, I want to make sure that we... 2020 election was, of course, the most important election in the world ever. We always hear people say that, but this one really was. And then number two, the 2022 election is the next most important election, because if we don't take down some of these senators that are up for re-election and these members of the House, we have to give Biden. Who is that?
That's not mine.
That's not mine either.
Was it mine?
It may have been one of yours. Mm-hmm.
They're coming. They're coming through. They're coming through the door. They're coming to get me. I'm like Fagin and Oliver Twist. They're coming to get me here in my lair. Anyway, so I think that in order to give Biden more resources and to strengthen that whole thing, that's what I'm very keen on, is picking a modest handful of Senate and House races and even local races and putting some energy into that and raising money for that. I mean, I hate the whole campaign finance thing, but, we certainly contemplated not leaving the country, because that's always a tired idea. People say they want to leave the country. The idea of leaving America, oddly enough, is kind of unthinkable to me in one sense. But taking a break from here, like if Trump had won, we probably would have left for like a year and gone to London or Spain or Italy or somewhere pretty and culturally. And we'd wait for the COVID to die down a little bit more. And when we thought we could travel freely, we probably would go somewhere else. And we're still contemplating the same idea. We're still thinking that even though Biden and Harris won, we still think it's a great time to get the hell out of here, after the COVID vaccine gets addressed and gets circulated. Maybe the fall of next year, we go away for a while to just to have that experience with the kids. Because
right, once they get older.
This situation, the political race and the COVID forcing us to think that way. We were forced to think, where do we go for our kids to live a normal life? And what occurred to us was that, once we started to open up to that idea, it didn't matter who won the race. Like, we really want to get out of here. Just not that we want to get out of here, but just somewhere else we want to try for a while and get a taste of while the kids are young. You know what I mean?
You have this family that's like very ensconced, or at least was, in Long Island and politics. Do you ever think about like pushing your brother to run for that congressional seat? Well, actually, that brother, Billy, lives in California. But do you ever think about like Baldwin's in office?
No, I don't. I mean, there was a time when I really was very keen on that, but that because of the, my kids, you hear that herd of elephants going through the hallway? That was something that was a huge dream of mine, and I really thought my heart was in the right place and doing that for the right reason. Shh. Daddy's really talking to Molly Zhang fast. Quiet. I thought that there was something that was a huge dream of mine, but I think with the kids now, I still think about it. I still would like to run for something, but probably I don't think I would, because my wife doesn't want that kind of lifestyle.
Yeah.
I mean, I really thought that I would, if I did that, I would be doing it for the right reason. You know, it's like the life I have now, and this sounds like Trump, unfortunately, but the life I have now, I'm very happy with.
Yeah.
Mm. In order to go into that life where, you know, I went to an event. I went to the Democratic caucus in Iowa to give a speech. I was the keynote speaker. And I went to Des Moines to give this speech a few years ago. And we went to three different rooms. There was like the gold room, the platinum room, diamond room. You know, went from a room of like, you know, pigs in a blanket and beers and guys with open collar shirts and more of a working class crowd. And they, you know, they have got food in their mouth when they're talking to you, and everybody wants a picture. It's a very kind of retail politics. Then the next room was more of higher donors and white wine and chicken skewers. And then the third room, the diamond room, was no drinks, no food. They wouldn't bother eating at the center. They were all on their way to the country club for dinner right after this event. So, and that was like the high-end donors to this event. And my friend turned to me, the guy that brokered this appearance I had, he said to me, he goes, now, if you ran for office in New York, he goes, this is what you would be doing 6 nights a week. Oh. Like 6 nights a week, you're raising money and you're just out there and you don't have any life. And I love, my fantasy would be to be appointed the ambassador to Spain, or better yet, my wife is the ambassador to Spain. And I sit back and she comes home from work and I just go, oh no, you're kidding. And they said that? Oh God, no, that's terrible. And I just sit back and relax and enjoy myself, you know?
That's great.
I dreamed about it for a long, long time, but I don't think that that's possible, right?
Yeah. That's interesting, though. I mean, you do have a lot of, you can maybe make one of your siblings do it. One of them. Not, except for one of them. Have I missed any really important question that I need to ask you?
Well, my dream now, I told my wife, I said, let's sell our house on Long Island.
Right.
And let's sell our apartment and convert everything to cash. And then go and live in, and we're going to pick 12 cities. And we're going to live for a year in each city in the fanciest, most expensive hotel. We'll spend $1 million a year on room service and tipping people and parking. And we're going to go to like the Ritz Madrid. We're going to go to the Crillon. We're going to go to the Connaught. We're going to go to all of our favorite hotels, Tokyo, Moscow, Johanna, you know, Cape Town. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Buenos Aires. We go to these 12 cities. And then when we're done, we turn to the kids and say, we don't have any money left to put you through school. We're broke. We have no money left. But what an experience this has been. Hasn't this been a great experience for all of you? Doesn't that sound like a good plan?
It's very Royal Tenenbaums.
Bingo. I love that.
I love that.
I love that. I'm still pushing my wife to do that, but she's resistant.
I can't imagine why.
On that note, we'll wrap up this episode of The New Abnormal from The Daily Beast. In future episodes, we'll be talking with smart folks from The Daily Beast and beyond, from media, culture, politics, and science, who will help us understand what's happening to our country and the world.
We hope you'll subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app and share the show on social media. We're just getting started and don't want you to miss an episode. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, I'm Molly Zhongfest and he's the Rick Wilson. Thanks so much for listening and we'll see you again on the next episode.
Hold up.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.